Welcome to the Spike Feed, your leading Magic the Gathering podcast. What is up? My name is Curtis, and I'm just a typical Spike. On the line with me, with a sparkling new V-neck. That thing looks sharp, Cameron. Cameron McCoy, producer extraordinaire, MTG Yellow Belt, the real McCoy himself. How you doing, friend?
Great, man. How about you?
I'm good. It feels like I've said that introduction a few times.
At least 200, but I'm going to say 250 with like the amount of times that we've probably had to restart or something.
Definitely. Hey, so this week we're going to talk about what we've been playing, talk about the PT. We'll spend a little bit of time talking about it being episode 200, but I do want to emphasize this. Cameron and I kind of made a decision to do another show. Like,
yeah,
you know, I feel like it can be a very dangerous thing, over promising and under delivering, or creating a huge workload for yourself for an anniversary episode. And we really want to provide a regular episode. That's kind of one of our hallmarks, is consistency. We've got that fiber, Cameron.
We are fibrous. Yeah.
Yeah. And so, we wanted to make sure we hit that mark, and there's a ton of stuff to talk about. And then we're going to close out this week talking about stuff from a couple months ago. Breath of the Wild, Wonder Woman, you know, all the really current stuff, other pop culture discussions. So, Cameron, tell me about this rotating format you've attempted.
Yeah, I discovered it. Apparently, my shop offers it every week. It's called Standard.
And, Interesting.
Dude, I haven't played Standard in like 7 months. I want to say it was like before Christmas even, like was the last time I played. So it's been a long, long time.
And I'd say in the last like two seasons, you've been pretty touch and go with it, right? Like,
Yeah. I mean, ever since Rise of the Eldrazi, the other Eldrazi...
Battle for Zendikar.
There we go.
Oath of the
How about
Gate
that?
Watch.
One of those. Like I kind of fell out around then. Clearly. But anyway, it is weird because you know you draft enough, and all of a sudden you open up your trade binder, and you've got the makings of a deck. Like, and that's exactly what happened. I didn't even realize that I had like 5 Westvale Abbeys sitting in my trade binder. Huh? Like, I had no idea, right? And they're like $5 a piece or whatever. So. Have that. I have my Selfless Spirits and Spell Quellers from like when I was trying to build some sort of spirits deck, and all of a sudden I have Blue White Monument. Mm-hmm. And so I go ahead and build Blue White Monument. I just had like some really basic cards that I needed to fill with it, namely like Dusk to Dawn and Metallic Rebuke. Those are like the two cards that for some reason I just never played with. So maybe it's because I haven't played Standard in such a long time. I really, really like this Standard right now. It's different. It's not like the Standard of like when I first played, when it was like Blue White Control Theros era or whatever. But it's good, and I'm digging it. I mean, this is essentially just kind of like a white weenie deck that's splashing for Cloudblazer and Spellqueller. But it's really good. And so anyway, I went 3-1, which was awesome. Won some more prize packs, and that's about it. So let's see. Decks of note. I'm sure we're going to talk about this in the Pro Tour. I didn't really see any mono red, but...
you're about to.
Right? Yeah. Zombies seems to be the deck du jour. There's a lot of people playing Zombies, which it was like the deck that I lost to, and it is just really, really good. The other interesting deck was, the Blue-Red Control deck, which I think we've talked about before. And I will say, as much as I haven't played Standard, the greatest regret I will probably have for not playing Standard for the past year is not playing with Torrential Gear Hulk, because that card, man, is just so good and so fun, and it does so much. It's what you want a Magic card, or like it's what I want a Magic card to be. It's just a Snapcaster Mage on steroids, and it's fantastic. So, yeah, I mean, I can just wax poetic forever. I mean, I'm I think it's because I haven't played it in such a long time, but I came into standard and I think I'm just going to do this, you know, until rotation again. So I'm digging it.
Yeah. That a lot of this has to do with them really pushing the standard showdown for me and making it a Saturday afternoon event, which again, very professional guy friendly, you know, even me leaving the shop on a Saturday night at 10 o'clock or whatever, I'm like, oh man, this is luckily the Royals were in extra innings and that kind of kept me going, but on the drive home. But dude, like I want just a match during the day, you know? Did you also play some modern this week?
Yeah, I did. And you know, it's crazy. Friday night, there's over 40 people who showed up for modern. Like, I think I underestimate the popularity of that format.
It's crazy popular, dude.
Yeah, and it's not a bad thing. I mean, it's awesome to see so many people like truly passionate about it. And I played Blue Black Fairies, and I ended up only going for two rounds because I was just tired and like I didn't want to stick around for, I think it was like seven rounds. I'm not doing that. So I got like my two rounds of fairies play and played against, lost against the artifacts deck and then won against a blue black mill deck, which was cute, you know. So, I mean, nothing interesting to say about modern except just like I need to quit dogging on it because I'm clearly wrong and everybody else loves it. So, you know.
I just feel like for me, it is what it is. And a lot of times I get very frustrated with modern because I feel like we've talked about this. Sometimes it's so matchup dependent and sometimes you lose to like just the worst, most catastrophic misplays and it does not matter. And that is just like, if you are just a born and bred legacy player, it's really hard to stomach. Because Legacy has these moments where it's like, oh, you fetched the wrong land. You just lost.
Yep.
You know, and it's like Legacy is Demon Souls or Dark Souls or something. It's just, it's all about punishing your mistakes. And there's such a like a high level of, I don't want to call it adrenaline. I don't know what it is, but it is like, you know, you feel like you're really into it where it's like, you know, when half your opponents are on burn in modern, it's okay. Yeah. Do I get a core firewalker or not? Yeah. I don't know.
To be fair, though, I do think those moments do happen in modern sometimes. It's just they're fewer and further between than like what happens, it seems like, every Friday night when I play Legacy, right?
So yeah, and that's the nature of the format. Everything's so compacted
into
those first few turns. Look, I've been playing Hour of Devastations limited a lot this week. I shouldn't say this week, but like on the weekends. And look, I don't know that I have much new and interesting to say besides I still have the same problems. I am the king of going 2-1 in that format. Like, I cannot win a draft to save my stinking life. I draft a bunch of creatures in a deck and then attack people. And when I open gods, I do a lot better. Right?
Surprise.
I mean, honestly, though, I had a deck that I was like, this is hot fire. I had the Crested Sunmare horse, and I had the Scarab God, or the Locust God, and I thought, man, this deck is going to crush. And then I went up against an opponent that had the Scorpion God or whatever, and I was like, all right, well, cool. That was cool. But I'm also, just as a side note, getting into Rug Energy and Paper and kind of hitting the trade tables and all that. And again, the standard ramp up for me is more of a matter of convenience. I very felt like a month or two ago that I was just kind of selling out of standard. My shop wasn't offering it at any point besides Friday night. But now that there's this push for Saturdays, it's like, okay, well, I'll just buy into a standard deck and play that during the day. And that'll be a lot of fun. I'm also getting, like we talked about previously, a little burnout on modern. I just need to understand my relationship with that format.
Yeah.
And just play it every once in a while, but not make it my main squeeze because I just find it too frustrating for it to be the thing that I'm doing. But I want to talk about modern, Cameron.
Sure.
I played it last night and decided, okay, no for banned humans. Let's get real. Let's go back to Storm. Okay, and GiftStorm, yeah, as I do. And GiftStorm has done very well on Magic Online and in paper. It's a very established deck in the meta at this stage.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? It did what it was supposed to do. However, I felt a little bad. My first opponent last night, I was like, okay, shuffling up. I'm mulligan. I'm like, man, I'm not feeling good about this hand, you know? And my opponent's like, I think you're going to be just fine. I'm like, okay. And so then he goes, turn one, Forest, Attune with Aether. I'm like, what? He's like, I forgot my modern deck, so I'm in the tournament with the standard deck. Which, you know what? Kudos to that guy.
That's some gumption right there.
Right, right. Because I would have been panhandling the whole store. Anybody got a modern deck I can borrow?
Yeah.
Please,
yeah.
I'll do any, you know, I'll split winnings with you, whatever. Instead, that guy is like wearing it, and yeah. I love that.
Yeah. Sometimes you got to roll a hard six, right?
Yeah, exactly. And I love that it wasn't even like the mono red standard deck or something that could feasibly.
Just in tune with Aether.
Just a and I ended up turn three in both games or
of
something.
Of course, yeah.
Anyway, and so then I lost to Counters Company on kind of a weird, you know, like usually that's a pretty favorable matchup, especially, I mean, game one is pretty much they have nothing. Mm-hmm. And then game two, I stormed out and I was one mana away from being able to hold Remand up. And I needed to, you know, I'm storming off, I'm Manamorphosing, and I need to find an untapped land. I have like four lands in play. I can only get to a Spire Bluff Canal. So then I like create, I don't know how many goblin tokens, and I'm like, he's probably got Orzhov Pontiff. Sure enough, pass to him, he cords for the Pontiff, and then he ends up killing me. So I end up not being able to do it. Then I beat Death Shadow, which again, I think that's one of the reasons that GiftStorm has done so well, is a lot of times it feels like I'm pretty favored in that matchup. They have to really not just Thoughtseize me and Inquisition me a lot, but be very fortunate with the order and how that all works.
Yeah.
But they end up with a ton of dead cards because a lot of times I don't have a creature in play and they've got like, you know,
however
bolts
many
and crap.
Exactly.
Bolts and fatal pushes and stuff, and they just don't do anything against me. And then I beat 8-Rack. The same 8-rack opponent. And of course, I did the, he's kind of a coming back player to the game. So I go through this whole thing and I storm out. I say, okay, Grapeshot, you know, for 18 or whatever. And he's like, well, this only deals me one. I'm like, no, it storms. He's like, well, did you declare storm? I said, yeah, yeah. I said, storm trigger, blah, blah, blah. So he calls the judge over, and I was explaining this to you before the cast, but whenever I flashback past in flames and I'm casting spells into exile, I put them perpendicular to the graveyard in between my opponent and I to like signify these are the ones that have been flashback and these are the ones still in the graveyard, right?
Mm-hmm.
I've been playing Storm a long time in Modern, so like I have
clear.
I have a very clear system for how this all works. I have very designated dice. I got it all, okay? And he calls the judge over, picks up my in exile pile, and he goes, he's only cast 8 spells. And I had to say, like, no, man, some of these have been flashback, blah, blah, blah. So it was just a real big mess trying to explain it. But he's an 8-rack player, so I didn't feel bad. Mm-hmm. And I punished him horribly. It felt great. So anyway, Cameron.
I'm proud of you.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, again, when you're playing against somebody like an 8-rack player and they're complaining about how unfair your deck is, like, I just... What are we talking about here, man? What are we doing?
Right.
You know? It's like when the lands player in Legacy complains about getting stormed out. Like, dude, stop.
Yeah.
Stop.
Yeah.
Right? Anyway, Cameron, we're going to talk about the Pro Tour and hitting episode 200, so we will be right back after this. This week, we want to thank a few of our Patreon supporters who have done an amazing job supporting the show. Brandon Crane, Seth Anderson, and Ben Jacobs, friend of the show. Thank you guys so much for supporting the Spike Feed. Their support makes the show possible. If you would like to also support the show, click on the Patreon link on spikefeed.com and we'd love to have you. And welcome back, guys. So, Pro Tour, Hour of Devastation. Now, I kind of just want to talk about the meta and kind of where we see things falling. There's not a ton of news. They don't do a series of announcements at the Pro Tour the way they used to. Paulo Vitor Domodossola, I hope I said that right. I tend to mess that up often. One playing Mono Red, six of the top eight decks were Mono Red. But I do want to mention this thing that popped up about coverage. So the Pro Tour is in Japan. So as you and I know too well, that's kind of the middle of the night for us.
Yep.
And, you know, there was a lot of talk of, you know, Twitch viewership was greatly impacted. And I'm wondering, is it like egocentric of Americans to want the Pro Tour in our time zones, or should the viewership be that much more valuable, like being on Twitch's front page, et cetera?
Oh, man. I don't know. I think there's a little egocentricity there, I guess. You know, if you want a world pro tour, I guess it's going to happen wherever, right? I mean, and if Wizards really wants to make an effort, they should treat it more like the Olympics. And maybe build their coverage so that it appeals to the American audiences at a specific time and day, and record all that stuff and make it into some sort of like highlight package, pre-produced. I don't know. I mean, that's a possibility if that's very, very important. But if not, 2 a.m. it is, and it's fine.
So. Yeah. You and I beat this drum, and we are very alone.
Yeah.
I mean, people flip out at the idea of a recorded thing that is 2 or 3 hours long, that is the coverage. I mean, it could be even longer, but basically you would have to have an editor sit down while the stuff is going and live edit it, basically, and get a pre-produced package that you can sit and take in, right? And I think maybe some of that is our TV background, whatever. I mean, but that would be a preferable way. If I knew that at 6 o'clock on Twitch or on YouTube, there was going to be a 3-hour Pro Tour package where I could watch pure magic, not inside R&D, not, you know, coverage analysis and stuff, that's all fine in the context of a live event. And those people do a great job in the live event.
For sure.
But one of the things that's really tough for me, you're asking me to stay up till way past my bedtime. And it's like 25 minutes of magic for every hour. It's pretty tough. Maybe that's unfair. I should run the actual numbers. But, you know, so I end up watching it video on demand. And even on the video on demand on Twitch, it's a ton of stuff where I'm not watching matches, you know? And that's been the thing that they need to address. So, I mean, the other thing I would say is, maybe it's time to just peel back from it being a world tour and just always have the Pro Tour in one location.
Sure.
You can build a much better coverage system that way. And it, I mean, there's just no way it's not cheaper, right?
Yeah.
That's right, Cameron. I just hit you with the double negative. but let's talk about the actual meta itself, because Mardu Vehicles and Rug Energy, we've seen basically not at all. Blue-red control isn't exactly lighting the world on fire either here. The decks that we're seeing are mono-red, 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 then with a sprinkling of green-black constrictor. So talk to me, Cameron. There's no real blue-white monument here either, right?
No.
So we've seen this a few times in the Pro Tour. Mono-red dominates, but you argue that this is a good thing.
Yeah, you know, and I'm probably completely wrong, but it just always seems like whenever there is a dominant mono red top eight, it bodes well for standard as far as like having a little bit more of a diverse meta come a month down the road. and we've seen this in the past, but I mean, there's a lot of decks that are like hovering just below this mono red deck right now on MTG Goldfish that I think have legs, and they probably have a lot of tools that they can deal with something like mono red. And so for me, I feel like this is a very low to the ground, you know, very fast aggro type deck, but I feel like there's opportunity for something else, especially when there's so many freaking Wraths in the thing right now. We should be able to clear the road with all these mono red decks, I think.
Yeah, and I mean, the thing that makes me hopeful is that the mono red deck is very creature centric.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've seen mono red decks in the past that are much more burn, and those are the ones that, especially in the context of a standard deck, are hard to interact with. But I mean, we were talking about this at the shop. Nobody's playing four Magma Sprays anymore. And that's a pretty good card against this deck. Outside of the, I mean, I don't know how many cards in this deck have one toughness, but it's a lot of them.
Mm-hmm.
There's a card in Amaket, right? That is one red mana, deal one damage to everything. Right? Like, there are ways to deal with this stuff. Now, of course, you're going to see a ton of mono red at the shop for the next couple weeks, because this is not only a really successful deck, but an inexpensive one.
Mm-hmm.
That being said, I think the breakout card has got to be Ramunap Ruins. We never talked about when we went through the spoilers and so forth. I got much more acquainted with these uncommon deserts through Limited. But I was talking about this at the shop. I think Ramunap Ruins is good enough to be a one of in Legacy Burn. Is this crazy?
No, not at all, right? I mean, paying one life in order to get a red for yourself, that's totally good. And I mean, there are times when burn does flood out, right? And if you have two deserts in play, four deserts in play, it's just one additional burn spell that can help you win, right? I mean, so yeah, Ramunap Ruins is a very good and interesting card. The one that clears graveyard, a recurring, I can't remember which desert that is. I think that one's really, really good too. And those are the two that I do think, and I agree with you, I think there might be some legs there for it to be in Eternal formats. Yeah.
Yeah, like the thing with the Ramunap Ruins in Modern is you play the Burn Mirror too often.
Mm-hmm.
To deal yourself two incidental damage, but in Legacy, man, it doesn't matter.
Like, mm-hmm.
And so the negative interaction is, of course, Fire Blast. So you want some concentration of mountains, but just having one, and it's better than Barbarian Ring, because I think Barbarian Ring is the one that has to have Threshold, right?
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, it's an intriguing card outside of Standard. However, man, is it the engine, because I don't know how many times you feel like, when I'm watching the Pro Tour clubs, things stabilize, and it's like, oh, wait, they've got four damage worth of lands just sitting there.
Yeah.
It's incredibly powerful and a really intriguing method of card advantage. But I want to back up what you said, man. Like, I think you're going to see a lot of innovation down the line, and I think maybe we're just getting to the point where Standard's finding itself again.
Mm-hmm.
And not to be too positive, because I don't want to go down that road.
Oh, yeah. I mean, this could just be mono red for the next 6 months, and it's going to be awful.
Yeah, but I think there's just, A, ways to beat this, and B, Standard's going to be, and I hate coming to this conclusion, but you know it's true, more people are going to play Standard when there's a good, cheap mono red deck. That's going to help a lot of people that might have been burned when you banned Emrakul or Marvel or whatever, whether that was right or wrong.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Right. The other thing that we had this really interesting talk at the shop about was, okay, if Smuggler's Copter was still in the format, just Smuggler's Copter, like everything else that got banned is banned, but just Smuggler's Copter, is this deck any good? And I think you could almost come to the conclusion that no, it's not. Because if you turn to a Smuggler's Copter after you play like a Thraben Inspector or whatever, all these mono red creatures are terrible.
Yeah.
And so it's such an interesting confluence of events that have gotten us to this deck.
Right.
But no, man, if you were to tell me you're going to see 6 of 8 decks in the top 8 be mono red and you're going to feel okay about it, I can't believe it, but I am.
Mm-hmm. I'm the same.
So, Cameron, let's just engage in like 5 minutes worth of navel gazing. Welcome to the Spike Feed, your number one source of Magic the Gathering tournament information and financial coverage. I am one of your hosts. My name is Curtis. Alongside me, my partner in crime, Dustin. Dustin, how are you, sir?
Doing all right. Still waking up from the day.
And we have our producer on the line as well. He's our resident MTG noob, Cameron. Cameron, how are you?
Good, man. How are you?
I am fantastic. I'm excited to get started. This is our inaugural show, right?
Episode 101?
Yeah. I'm pumped. Yeah. I'm way
too pumped.
Does
that mean we get
pumped. A party? No. Maybe after, like, what do you think, 50 episodes?
We get 50, a party then?
Yeah.
Something like that? Anyway, so let's kind of run down the show. We're gonna talk about our week, what we've been playing. We're going to talk from the vaults, do a little deck tech with green-red aggro. We're also going to talk about those black-on-black planeswalkers, and then we're going to assist Cameron in the ever-evolving journey of becoming a tournament Magic player. So let's start with what we've been playing, Cameron. We've hit 200 episodes.
Mm-hmm.
Roughly 4 years of content.
Yeah, man. It has, yeah.
So talk to me, man. How are you feeling?
You know, it's really interesting just going back and re-listening to the first episode. And there's a lot of things that we've obviously improved upon and just gotten more comfortable with just because of the repetition and whatnot. But it is really, really funny to just listen to little Cameron ask, like, what a Domri raid does, or has no clue what Jace the Mind Sculptor really is, right? And so, like, just to see more than anything the progress of the last 4 years of my journey to a Spike player, you know, has been very, very interesting. And just reflecting on that, that's probably the thing that I've taken away the most.
Yeah, well, and you're not just a guy with a soundboard.
Sure.
Right? You know, like, yeah. It's something that's definitely evolved over time. And I do also want to say, like, whenever we have listeners that kind of catch up to us and they're like, hey, I want to listen to all your old episodes, my gut reaction is, don't do that, man.
Yeah. Maybe start at like 110.
maybe start like 40 episodes ago.
Yeah.
You know, and going through that, there are some things that we've evolved or changed, sometimes out of necessity, sometimes just out of keeping the show kind of what we want to do. Because, you know, a few things I would say that we've peeled back on improving yourself as a player, in terms of technical stuff as time has gone by. And one of the main reasons
we're perfect players. So, I mean,
right. Yeah, it's so hard for us to come down from the mountain. Right? No, I feel like, first of all, the idea of the show being a weekly update show has always been kind of baked into it. Mm-hmm. Right. We've always wanted to be the fastest at the beginning of the week. We've always wanted to have the highest production values and always be talking about what's going on in the community, okay? Mm-hmm. And the number one feedback I get is that I would say highly critical is you're called the Spike Feed, but you're not really as spiky as you should be, right?
Mm-hmm.
And to me, that means, like, feed is in, like, the news, so it's like news for spikes, but whatever. You know, you can interpret it however you want, but the truth is there are a lot of shows that go into being a better player. Right?
Mm-hmm.
And there are a lot of shows where guys are just shooting the breeze. So we kind of want to cut that difference. And that's not an indictment or criticism of other shows. It's just kind of what we wanted to do.
Find our niche.
Find our niche, right. And doing things like Cameron Becomes a Spike anymore seems really inappropriate because now you've been playing for 4 years. You know the cards. I guess we could do it with standard cards now.
It's probably the best.
Yeah, but it just doesn't seem like it fits that much. And, you know, doing our little pop culture segment at the end of the show also really helps us stay fresh and talk about other things that we want to talk about, which I think is maybe more important to a Magic podcast than you might think, right?
For sure, right?
Because sometimes nothing happens in a week.
We're really stretching to get 30 minutes even.
Yeah. And so I feel like this is me just kind of addressing a lot of the discussions I've had with people. But the other thing is people say, hey, the show's short. Originally, the plan was each week would only be 30 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And that was with Cameron Becomes a Spike and all these other things. And so we've kind of added that stuff on the end just to try and lengthen it for people. Because mm-hmm. for some reason, people really want a two-hour-long podcast.
Yeah.
And I don't know how to tell you this, man, but we just can't keep it interesting for that
long. Yeah. Good things come in moderation. We'll just say.
yeah, for sure. So, but no, first of all, dude, on a personal note, I want to say, Cameron, that outside of this has been a great way for us to maintain a friendship, you know, because.
Oh, yeah.
Not to go too much into this, but Cameron decided that he couldn't live in the same city as me any longer. Moved to Des Moines, thinking that he could ignore me. but it's been, you know, 4 years of a ton of up and downs, both professionally and personally for both of us.
Mm-hmm.
And to have this outlet to come on and talk has been awesome, man. So thank you for, you know, thank you for being a friend.
Thank you for being a friend.
Travel down the road and back again.
Travel down the road and back again.
Yeah.
Your heart is true.
Let me insert some sort of John Mellencamp lyric right here.
That was actually the Golden Girls theme song.
Okay. That is like, that could not be more appropriate for the Spike feed, if you ask me.
But I do also just want to drop some, outside of that, some just tips, right? Because we do get questions about how to, you know, produce content. What are the benefits of it? People ask Cameron for audio advice. Not enough of them. Okay. But hey, dude, it is a total grind. I don't know how many podcasts have gotten past episode 200, but A, you got to be willing to commit to a grind. And sometimes that's been a problem for us. We've wanted to do more stuff than the show, but things have popped up in our lives and it's been way too difficult.
Yeah,
it's been way too difficult to keep up with. And I know Cameron's going to be like, dude, if you want advice, stop recording the freaking Skype call. Record yourself.
No.
You know, it's a little amusing to me that people drop hundreds of dollars on audio equipment and then just record a Skype call, but whatever. Whatever. Anyway, Cameron, that's enough navel-gazing. Let's get out of this segment. Let's talk about what's been going on with us this week.
Thank you.
All right, Cameron, lots of little things to talk about this week, which, by the way, we're not going to dig into Game of Thrones for a while.
Yeah, we need to wait.
Yeah, we need to wait. There's a lot to talk about, though. Oh, my God, is there a lot to talk about.
There's a lot of guy liner, I'll say that.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Anyway, so Cameron, can we talk Switch real quickly?
Oh, yeah, because you picked one up. I'm curious what the past couple weeks have been with that, with you.
I was on vacation with my in-laws for about a week, so the Switch is something I ran out and bought. And so here's the thing. I think it is definitely Nintendo's best system since the GameCube.
Oh, yeah.
Or maybe the DS. Like, I think it blows the Wii U and the Wii and their various DS incarnations kind of out of the water in terms of what the device is. And it's an incredible piece of kit. I will say it is a little awkward in terms of sizing in like your backpack and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And that's something that, you know, kind of takes a little bit of getting used to. And of course, just like any person with a pulse, I picked up Zelda, which I guess there are more games than that now, right? There's Splatoon 2, which is reviewed very well. ARMS reviewed better than expected. But I really hit Zelda hard. Now, I played it before on Wii U through the first dungeon. Mm-hmm. So I cooked through the beginning of the game because I knew where everything was,
sure,
what to maximize. Like, I remembered a shocking amount of where things were. And I think that's a testament to the game's kind of like how you have to manage the map and all that.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man. I think that game is probably going to be my game of the year. But I will say this. I think it is way better on Switch. Not just for technical stuff, but the whole being able to put it into sleep mode.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Pick it up and play it here. Like, it is a good console. It's a great console game. It's probably the best portable game ever made.
For sure.
So have you finished it yet, Cameron?
Yes. I've been all the way up to the Ganondorf, and I haven't actually beat that, and I've started another game just to play the dungeons. Honestly, I'm not really interested in any of these Zelda-y parts of it. It's all this new stuff that really, like, I think I've talked about that. Like, I could just spend hours in, like, the dungeon puzzles, which is, like, you know, a shrine appears, you go underneath the earth, and then you have to solve a puzzle. And to me, that's where it really is, it's where it's the strength lies. And as you mentioned, the pick up and go aspect of that is just thoroughly enjoyable. I wish sometimes like it was just a list of those dungeons and I could just go through them and click one, go play, click two and go, right? Like that's
Zelda VR missions.
Yes, yes. So, but yeah, I mean, it's a great game. Yeah, it's definitely like one of the best games I've played. I have a stronger connection to Persona right now as far as like deep love of that, but I think if I had to choose, Zelda's still the better game. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's weird because the thing that's great about Zelda is just that feeling of freedom, of going anywhere and just like, you can just futz around and it doesn't matter, right? But it doesn't really crescendo.
Yeah.
And doesn't really have a dramatic arc. Like, even when you finish it, it's like, yo, dog, good job. Mm-hmm. And you're like, okay. Whereas the other contender for Game of the Year, Horizon, crescendos, like, that game starts out as like, there is no way this is as good as Zelda. No way. And then by the end of it, like, I mean, I'm locking myself in my man cave for 2 hours to get more of this story. So, you know, very different experiences, but man, both great games. Yeah. And you heard all my praise for Horizon, and you promptly ran out and bought The Order 1886.
Dude, it was $5 on the PSN sale from last week or whatever, so of course I had to go pick it up. So I picked up that and Mirror's Edge, both of which I know have reviewed very poorly whenever they came out 2-4 years ago. I don't even know now.
I think The Order came out before Bloodborne.
Yeah, I mean, it was like, it wasn't a launch title, but it was like really soon after, right? Or maybe I'm wrong on that. Regardless, The Order, it's this Victorian era third person type shooter that plays very, very similarly to Gears of War, I would say. And there's some things that are just like amazing about this game. Like the engine they're using is incredible. Like the horsepower they're pulling out of like graphics and all that stuff, art direction is really, really, really good. But for me, man, like I never locked on to game or Gears of War. Like it was just never something that I liked. I really despised the gameplay mechanics of Gears. Like it's like, okay, I see the crate that I'm supposed to hide under and everything's just like perfectly even. And like, there's just something about that that just really bugs me. So yeah, like The Order is very similar to that. And like, I just feel like I'm walking down a corridor and shooting and there's not really any sort of skill or like strategy more than just kind of shooting. It feels kind of like, and I don't want to be disparaging, but like Call of Duty, where I just feel like I'm just walking down a corridor rather than trying to build strategy around a shooter. So that's where like my biggest criticism of the game lies, where I just don't even want to play it.
Oh, that's right. Did you get to the Tesla room? We get to walk through Tesla's lab.
No, that's cool though. You see, like all the stuff that you're talking about sounds amazing, but I just have to get through it, I guess. So
yeah, I mean, the gameplay is just kind of whatever. Like it's fine. Mm-hmm. It is a bad version. I would quibble that I think Gears of War has a much better system.
Oh, for sure, probably.
Combat. Then I mean, even Uncharted. Like the problem with Uncharted games is it's I say especially Uncharted 4 tends to be a little bit more loose. Mm-hmm. Where I feel like Gears of War, once you get into the higher level stuff, is much more about the strategy of how you're tackling the enemies in what order and stuff. But no, dude, you're fine. Like a lot of people, I would totally admit that that game is an acquired taste, but I really dug it.
Yeah.
So you're wrong, and I should hang up on you.
That's fine. That's fine.
Did you play Mirror's Edge?
I haven't touched that one yet, so that's going to be my September, kind of things slow down for me at work, and that's when I'll just kind of dive deep into that. And I No, I still haven't. There's so much that I still need to finish, but I just keep on starting more and more. So
try going on a several week long vacation, and you'll find yourself just cooking through games like I do.
I'm sure. Yeah. Yeah.
So the other thing I really wanted to cover is Wonder Woman. So I finally got to take that in, right?
Yeah.
Got the in-laws to watch my kids, and so I got to go see... I really liked it a lot. But here is such a frustrating experience to watch after Batman versus Superman, because you think, how did they get this right? Which I would argue that Wonder Woman is a harder cinematic property to pull off.
Oh, yeah.
And they pulled it off in spades, and then you think... What? How is Superman so difficult for you, which has an established formula for how you make it work, and then you just make this unbelievable version of Wonder Woman? It's a great movie, and it's to its credit. But and by the way, so Zack Snyder, who we've always bagged on for Batman v Superman and Superman Man of Steel, he's got a writing credit on this.
Huh.
I would love to know how much of it is actually him versus the other writers or this director.
Yeah.
But it's there's this sequence in Wonder Woman that is kind of the big hero sequence where she gets up out of this trench and is so awesome and so DC, right? It's this iconic hero moment. And I just thought, I have not gotten that in any of these other movies.
Yeah.
Why?
I totally agree with you. It's frustrating to watch this movie, not because it's good, but because of the DC universe that surrounds it. And having to know that she and this character that we really now like is muddled in this garbage of the DC universe. And yeah, that's the most frustrating part of it, watching that film, because it's I like this character. She's great. She's a god. And look, you can still like her. It's weird, right?
Yeah, it's I don't want Justice League. I want Wonder Woman too.
Yeah.
Can we just not have the Justice League movie?
Yeah, yeah. But don't worry, we got Flashpoint, so they're just going to reset the entire universe except Wonder Woman, and it's all going to be good, right? So.
So look, just a few things about this. I got to give credit where credit was due. So, look, hey, I liked Gal Gadot in Fast and Furious movies, but did not believe she had this kind of performance in her.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome. Awesome. And Robin Wright Penn steals three scenes that she's in.
Oh, yeah.
But secondly, and I'm going to like something that I bet you didn't like, that I've heard a lot of criticism. They criticized this on the Slash Filmcast. I was so worried that we were going to learn Ares is a metaphor, that, it's all, the God of War is in all men, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, as soon as Ares actually showed up, he actually was there, I was like, thank God. Because the DCU, and I think we've kind of been tricked through the cinematic DC stuff that it's more gritty and grounded, but DC is actually wacky. It is way less grounded than Marvel. And I think for some people that comes as a surprise, but it's very true. I had this talk with my wife. Superman used to have cybernetic versions of Superman that would guard the city for him while he wasn't around.
Yeah, yeah.
Or Wonder Woman's got a flying car. The DC universe is so much more out there, generally speaking, right? It's just we've had so many Batman movies that are gritty, blah, 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 that's kind of been lost. And the Greek God pantheon stuff is in the DCU. So to actually have that happen, I was like, yes, this is some serious DC stuff. Now, the fight sequence, I wasn't in love with.
Yeah.
I think it would have been cooler if he was just this kind of vaporous ghost guy that is constantly meddling in things, a Loki or something. But I was glad that they didn't do the whole it's a metaphor thing, because then it would have been wait a minute, then how do the Amazonians exist? How does, you know? Yeah. So, I don't know, man. What did you think of all that?
No, I totally agree. I will say, like, I think I mentioned this whenever we talked about it originally, the last act of that movie where, like, yeah, the fight scene, I think, kind of broke down into more of, like, the Batman v Superman ball lightning in the sky and things mm-hmm. are just blowing up everywhere and it becomes kind of, like, it loses focus, I guess. But there's just so many moments and beats in that movie that I love. I love the nod to, like, Christopher Reeves that she has where she puts on a pair of glasses and, like, essentially catches the bullet the way that Christopher Reeves does in Superman, the original mm-hmm. Superman movie. There's just moments like that. It's like a nice little nod. It's like, this is a likable person. And it's just, it's like that fun escapist fantasy sort of sci-fi wacky stuff that you want. You know, I'm of the mindset that I don't want a grounded and real Superman, right? I want Superman to be fighting a giant space gorilla. Like, yeah. Like that's what I want. I want space kangaroos, you know, I want weirdness. And I just get a kick out of that stuff. And I hope that, and it seems to be the case that DC is understanding that people want their characters to stay true to who they really are. You know, Superman should live to help and serve people. The way that Wonder Woman is like this warrior princess who's going to just fight for the right of goodness, right? So, yeah, I hope they continue that trend as they reset the universe, which they'll inevitably do.
Yeah, and like the thing that I loved about it is whenever you have that conversation with someone that might be a little bit more cynical that's a comic book fan, they'll say, that's a naive perspective, right? That it's that a hero could be that, the best of us, that they could be perfect. Mm-hmm. But what I loved is they like actually address that in this movie.
Yeah.
Like, naive doesn't mean that you're incapable of doing something great.
Yeah.
And these characters have great power and great intentions. And I think it's no wonder that this movie, no pun intended, that this movie is doing so well because it's really striking on not just what people want out of this character, but what they want out of these types of popcorn movies. Mm-hmm. You know, I want to go to a popcorn flick. I want to feel good, man. It's not true. Not everything needs to be Dunkirk.
Yeah.
You know?
Right.
And whenever you have dude dressing up like a bat fighting crime, it definitely doesn't need to be Dunkirk. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
The whole point of a great superhero story is that it is a little unreal and outrageous and all that. And I do have to say, the big disappointment for me this summer has been Guardians of the Galaxy 2, Cameron. I felt like that was that just did not hit the right spots. Like, it was a little bit trying too hard. So, anyway. All right, Cameron. There's our superhero talk. I hate that we have to talk about Wonder Woman from the sense of frustration.
Right. But that's, yeah. Because it's a great film. Fun. Go see it if you haven't. So, yeah.
But yeah. It's like, you know, your star pupil has been turning in bad work for the past, you know, quarter. And then finally they turn in a great, you know, paper. And you're like, what the heck, man?
Yeah.
Why haven't you been doing this the whole time? So, anyway. Cameron, if someone would like to talk to you about, you know, not recording the Skype call, for example. Where could they find you?
They can do that all on Twitter, @Cameron_McCoy.
And I am @CurtisNow. Our official show feed is @SpikeFeedMTG. We will check you guys next week. For Dustin, Cameron, I am Curtis. You can catch up with me on Twitter @CurtisNow. Cameron, you are?
Cameron_McCoy.
And we are the Spike Feed. We will see you guys next week.